Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Plenty said by US President Donald Trump. Well, for more on this, let's cross live to Newsroom Africa's United States correspondent Simon Marks, who is in London. Simon, good to speak to you. Now, what's the general atmosphere of this year's United Nations General Assembly? Before we tackle some of those issues talked about by Donald Trump and why you were shaking your head.
Well, I think, Hugo, that actually Donald Trump really raised the central issue in many ways in the excerpt of his speech that we just played. I mean, when he asks that question, what is the purpose of the United Nations? It's a perfectly fair question to be asking in its 80th year at a time when the war between Russia and Ukraine continues to rage on, the humanitarian crisis and disaster in Gaza continues to dominate the front pages. I mean, there have been some advances in some of the meetings that have taken place on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly perhaps moving towards some kind of resolution to those conflicts. But, you know, when he raises that question, what is the purpose of the United Nations? In many ways, he's not the only person thinking that. He might be the only person actually articulating it behind the podium. But, you know, the United Nations, which just a few years ago was talking about its responsibility to protect civilians when they found themselves in harm, has notably failed to protect civilians who are in harm in many of those conflict zones. President Ramaphosa talking in his speech not only about Gaza and Ukraine, but also about the crisis in Sudan, and expressing the view that it was absolutely tragic that, as he put it, the world hardly appears to be noticing it. So in many ways, there was commonality between what Donald Trump was saying when he questioned the relevance of the United Nations and President Ramaphosa, who was saying that there'd been this erosion of credibility in the United Nations Security Council, and again articulating the view, as South Africa has now done for, I mean, we're certainly into the second decade, if not the third, that there needs to be architectural reform, particularly of the Security Council, to give countries like South Africa a greater voice. I mean, where I was shaking my head before we came on air was over these claims by President Trump that he's resolved seven wars. That is just not factually true. If you look at two of them, for example, Cambodia and Thailand, they weren't at war. There were some cross-border skirmishes that were taking place, and he managed to negotiate or help negotiate a ceasefire. The same is absolutely true of what was taking place earlier this year between India and Pakistan. It wasn't a full-blown war. There were cross-border skirmishes. President Trump claims that he brokered the truce. The Indians say he had nothing to do with it. It was a bilateral agreement between Delhi and Islamabad. So this claim solved seven wars that he keeps articulating is just factually not accurate.
So maybe it's a fair time to ask, right, that if President Trump can stake claim to having resolved seven wars or seven conflicts, where is the United Nations whilst these conflicts are happening?
Well, I think that is a perfectly reasonable question that he raised. I mean, there is some commentary in the United States today that says that President Trump asked the question, what's the purpose of the United Nations, and then didn't answer it. I mean, I think he did answer it. I think that you heard there that his vision for the United Nations is of a United Nations that, at the very least, picks up the phone and calls an American president when an American president is negotiating ceasefires and truces. And certainly, you know, the signing of the ceremony, the peace agreement between the DRC and Rwanda, between Azerbaijan and Armenia, there's no question that those were big historical moments. And he's saying he didn't even get a phone call from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres or anybody else. So he's actually advocating for a reinvigorated United Nations. He didn't put meat on the bones of how he envisages that. But he's not standing there and saying, we've got to just tear this up and walk away from this international organization. To be fair to Donald Trump, he actually made it clear, as he's done in the past, that he thinks the United Nations ought to be playing a role, has a role to play, and is basically abnegating its responsibility by not being able to forge sufficient unity of purpose, even to place a phone call to him as he was resolving some of those conflicts. And as I say, there is commonality between what President Trump was saying about the UN and what President Ramaphosa was saying.
Well, the one issue while we're still on the United Nations is the construct of the United Nations, particularly when you take a look at the Security Council and how President Ramaphosa says it is not representative of all nations. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, it's a post-1945 construct, isn't it? I mean, the permanent five members of the United Nations with veto powers are Russia, China, the United States, France, and the UK. And coming out of the Second World War in 1945, you could just about look at that and say, OK, fair enough, they are the big powers in the world. We're now in a multipolar world. And so South Africa, India, Brazil, President Lula there, of course, had a brief meeting with Donald Trump yesterday that the American president says went much better than he anticipated, although he conceded it was only about 40 seconds long. I mean, they're pushing, and they have been for years, those countries and others, for a bigger voice around the table at the UN Security Council. But the problem is the UN has to self-govern and self-revise its operations, and so you've got to get the permanent five members to agree to new architecture for the Security Council, and none of them exercise the veto over any plans that are presented. And it's a conundrum that the United Nations has been unable to navigate its way out of.
Now, let's touch a little bit on trade. Now, President Ramaphosa's talked about trade, how it's being weaponized, right? Now, Donald Trump is a powerful man. Is he likely to react positively to what President Ramaphosa said?
No. And I think it was notable that President Ramaphosa neither used Donald Trump's name nor even name-checked the United States when he spoke about trade being used as a weapon, although clearly everyone in the hall knew exactly who he was talking about. He did say later in the day, during an interaction at the Council on Foreign Relations, that President Trump had actually done South Africa a favor because it had kind of forced the president and the government to rekindle efforts to boost trade in other parts of the world on the basis that they could no longer rely on the solidity of trading relationships between South Africa and the United States. I mean, as we know, there are negotiations taking place between South African ministers and the U.S. Trade representative. Maybe there might be some dilution of American tariffs, but even in the last 24 hours, Donald Trump, in rounding suddenly on Vladimir Putin over the war on Ukraine, made it clear in his speech that if he doesn't see some progress, he's going to hit Vladimir Putin, as he put it, not with punishing sanctions, but with punishing tariffs. And that was a really interesting bit of phraseology, because it showed that Donald Trump sees tariffs, trade, as an absolute instrument of foreign policy. And so the relationship with South Africa, which, as we know, is in all sorts of difficulty for all sorts of geopolitical reasons, I mean, he's using those tariffs, as he might with Russia, clearly to punish the South African government on a whole range of broader issues.
So another conversation I'd like for us to touch on is the issue that President Cyril Ramaphosa called genocide, which is being committed in Gaza. He's advocated for two-state solutions. He's talked about the 142 countries that are now seemingly coming to the party in a continued push for peace, right? And he's talking about a need for the voice of the 142 nations to be heard.
Look, he's up against a rock in the form of President Trump and, of course, the Israeli government and the alliance that exists between them, because there are no circumstances in which the United States is ever going to describe what's taking place in Gaza as genocide. and no sight, no evidence in sight that President Trump is going to turn a blind eye to South Africa's role in bringing the genocide and the war crimes cases at the ICJ. I mean, that's been one of the main issues that have come to bedevil the U.S. relationship with South Africa. Now, it was interesting that it was reported that yesterday in his meeting with Arab leaders, President Trump, they say, committed to stopping Israel from moving to annex the West Bank. Now, if that is accurately being reported by people that were in the room and heard what President Trump had to say, that's a shift. That is a line in the sand that the United States might be drawing for Benjamin Netanyahu. But in terms of the broader issue of moving four square against what the Israelis have been doing in Gaza, or getting behind this description of what's taking place as genocide, the Republican Party, most Democrats, and certainly this White House and this State Department are just never, ever going to embrace with, are going to flirt with embracing that rhetoric.
And finally, before we let you go, Simon, I want to touch once more on African, on multilateralism and the African continent, and how President Cyril Ramaphosa took it upon his shoulders to not only fight for peace in Gaza, but certainly push a lot of the African agenda. Is the world listening? Is Donald Trump listening? What are the implications on South African President Cyril Ramaphosa?
I can't tell you that Donald Trump is listening, because as I think we've seen during Donald Trump's first term and his second term, he doesn't have a deep and abiding interest in Africa at all. But there are definitely other members of his administration who will be listening. And it's important to underscore that President Ramaphosa said that the United States is now back engaged in the planning and preparatory processes for the G20 Leaders Summit to be held at NASREC in Johannesburg in November. So I think that the fact that Vice President J.D. Vance is going to that summit, albeit President Ramaphosa would have preferred Donald Trump to go, but it does show a degree of engagement that we didn't think we were necessarily going to see. And it is important for President Ramaphosa to be there, saying that South Africa is still a gateway nation to the rest of Africa. He said that in reference to incoming trade flows from companies like Amazon and Google. He described those as, you know, a wind of investment that he said was coming into South Africa from the United States, even under these very straitened circumstances. But, you know, African states will also themselves have to find unity of purpose and of planning if they truly want to advance the aim of amplifying their voice, particularly on the United Nations Security Council. So they've still got a lot of work to do in that regard as well.
London News of Africa's US correspondent Simon Marks, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for clarifying those issues, unpacking for us what's come out of the United Nations General Assembly, the 80th one, which is currently underway.